Almost half of all Americans are taking some kind of prescription drug. 4 out of 5 seniors are taking at least one medication. Drugs are also used in farm animals, for pets, and on fish farms. It's no surprise, then, that pharmaceuticals are turning up in our drinking water. A new report by the Canadian Institute for Environmental Law and Policy looks at how drugs and other chemicals get into the water supply and what can be done about it. Susan Holtz wrote that report. She's a senior policy analyst with CLAP, and she joins me on the phone this morning from Toronto. Hello, Susan. Good morning. In the report, you look at a number of substances. What are those substances that you looked at?
Well, there are a number of different classes of substances. We looked at pharmaceuticals, for example. We looked at and we looked also at a number of substances that are now becoming known as endocrine disruptors, substances that can disrupt the endocrine system. And these include pesticides, a number of industrial chemicals like metals, phthalates, parabens, substances found in personal care products like shampoos, and a miscellaneous group of other chemicals that sometimes get tested for. So it's quite a wide range of different substances, and the main thing that ties them together is the fact that we can now detect them in water. These are substances that I refer to as emerging contaminants, because they are not typically tested for in drinking water treatment.
And how are they even getting into our water system?
Well, they come through a number of routes. One is that there has been a huge rise in the last 4 or 5 decades in the quantities of pharmaceuticals that we take. So, for example, in the United States, half of the population is now taking at least one prescription drug. And as the population ages, more and more people take drugs. Again, in the U.S., 5 out of 6 people who are over 65 take at least one drug. So there's a huge increase in the quantities of drugs that people are taking, and that means also that some of that amount of drugs is getting discarded as people don't complete a prescription, for example, or as prescriptions go past their due date and they get flushed down the toilet or the drain. But also, and very significantly, people excrete them. Somewhere between 20 to as high as 90% of the active ingredients in drugs in people simply get excreted with urine and feces, and therefore end up straight in the wastewater system. Another dimension of the increase in pharmaceuticals is in animal husbandry. Again, since the 1950s, small amounts of antibiotics were found to increase the rate of growth in domestic animals, and they are widely used as growth promoters. In fact, they are routinely used in animal feed. And similarly, in cattle, growth-promoting hormones are often implanted in cattle's ears. And again, not all of the active ingredients are used up, so to speak, in the body of the animal, but they're excreted out, and so they can end up in runoff that goes into eventually water sources and groundwater. So that's one class of things, pharmaceuticals. Others, like industrial chemicals and pesticides, end up in runoff from various places or in water treatment facilities. So there are quite a wide range of places where they can end up. Plumes from landfill operations that end up in groundwater or surface water. Essentially, this the title of the report pretty much sums it up. There is no away.
It sounds like there's just a huge array of substances that are in our groundwater. Do we know at this point to what extent these substances are present in our water systems and in groundwater?
Well, it should be recognized that the concentrations are very low. On the other hand, that may or may not be of significance for some of these chemicals, particularly endocrine-disrupting substances, which act in very small concentrations. Hard to say just how widespread they are in Canada. There's been a surveillance program in the United States since the very late 1990s, which isn't all that long ago, only, you know, half a dozen years or so, which has sampled surface water and groundwater from pretty much all over the United States and has consistently found in all of the samples, I shouldn't say all, in a very large portion of the samples, maybe 80 to 90%, a number of the contaminants that they are sampling for. They've looked for somewhere between, around 150 different kinds of contaminants, and these keep on consistently turning up. We've done a lot less sampling in Canada, but the sampling that we have done has turned up similar contaminants where we've looked for the most part.
You say in your report that we're still just at the beginning stages of understanding the environmental effects of this, but what are some of the concerns that scientists have about the kind of the contaminants that have been found?
I would say that the major concern revolves around endocrine disruption, which is the endocrine system in people and other animals is the system by which we produce hormones, which are the chemical messengers in the body that control a good many functions of the body, reproduction, and so forth. And endocrine disruption means that there are substances out there that can, one way or another, affect that system by, for example, mimicking the action of natural hormones in the body, or blocking the action of natural hormones in the body, or in other ways interfere with the body's systems of releasing hormones, transporting them in the body, metabolizing them, and then getting rid of them when they've fulfilled their function. So endocrine disruption can do all of these things, and some of the effects of this in wildlife have included, and this has been shown in a number of repeated tests, feminization of fish near sewage treatment outfalls. You will often find only female fish in that immediate vicinity because the males have been, in a sense, converted to females through the action of usually estrogens. Depressed thyroid and immune functions in fish-eating birds. And one quite striking study, we saw the entire collapse of the local population of a species of fish, in this case fathead minnows, who were exposed to estrogen in minute concentrations, as small as 5 or 6 nanograms per liter of water, which is an almost vanishingly small quantity. And that's an amount that's quite similar to what has often been found near wastewater treatment outfalls. So these are very suggestive about what their effects may be in larger mammals like people. But we obviously can't experiment on people, and so it's as yet unconfirmed exactly what kinds of effects these endocrine disruptors might be having on humans.
And the usual strategy for pollutants is to stop them getting into the environment right from the start. Is that an appropriate response in this case?
Well, not completely. That certainly is, generally speaking, the preferred strategy when we've discovered that some substance may be harmful in the environment. The best approach is to stop using it or restrict its use severely. In the case of things like pharmaceuticals, which are one of the classes of substances we're talking about here, I mentioned earlier how hugely their use has grown. Well, that's not entirely a bad thing. In the case of growth promoters in animals, we could certainly do without that. That would have an economic effect, but we can certainly continue to raise animals without these substances. In the case of human therapeutic drugs, it's arguable that many of these drugs are really important, and particularly with an aging population, they're the best and cheapest and most effective way to deal with a number of human diseases. So I don't think that we're going to be able to get many of these substances out of the environment because they're just too useful. So there will be a continuous supply, so to speak, entering the environment from pharmaceutical sources and possibly from some other sources too. Some industrial chemicals also may be just too valuable to restrict completely.
And I guess from what you were saying earlier, it's more than a question of simply telling people not to flush extra medication down the toilet.
Although they certainly shouldn't do that.
Since part of the problem is these substances being excreted in addition to them being thrown away.
Yes, although as consumers, people can certainly do something about that in the sense that for the pharmaceuticals that are used for growth promotion in animals, we can choose to eat organically, buy meat that is organically raised or just naturally raised, which usually means without the use of hormones. And similarly, in the case of the many industrial chemicals like parabens and phthalates, that show up in personal care products like shampoos and cleaning products, we can do our best to read labels and avoid products that contain these kinds of substances. Although that puts quite a strong burden on consumers, and we would like to see more effort going into environmentally friendly labeling that would help people determine just what's, endocrine disruption free in the way of personal care products.
Do you think that there are other things that government should be doing to stop these substances getting into the water and tackle this problem in general?
Well, there are a couple of approaches that do involve trying to keep them out of the water, such as having comprehensive provincial-wide programs of taking back unused pharmaceutical products. In fact, in British Columbia, there is such a program, but to date, there isn't a similar province-wide program across the board in any other province in Canada. Similarly, there are a few states in the United States that are initiating this kind of an approach, but that's only a partial one. I think that the single most important task for governments and a task that's vital to all other actions is to define the scale and the significance of the problem. In other words, putting a great deal more money into the funding for the science related to these issues, including surveillance and monitoring, environmental risks, environmental science, and the human and wildlife health aspects of this. This is quite vital.
And what about at the municipal level? Are there things that should be happening in terms of how we treat wastewater?
Well, I think it would also be helpful if there was research on different municipal water treatment technologies, both for drinking water and for wastewater treatment, that assessed which technologies were most effective at getting various of these contaminants out of the wastewater or the drinking water. Different treatment technologies do, in fact, have different effects on different of these substances, and there isn't a really comprehensive way of looking at the pros and cons and the risks and benefits of and costs, too, of different treatment technologies. It would be helpful, particularly for municipalities that are adding to or replacing their own water infrastructure, to be able to assess what's the most useful technologies for doing this. And we don't really have that kind of information handy.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Susan.
You're welcome.
I've been speaking with Susan Holtz. She is Senior Policy Analyst with the Canadian Institute for Environmental Law and Policy. You can find a link to her report on our website, which is coopradio.org/redeye.